The following shiur is being recorded for TorahDownloads.com, a project of the Yehuda Mann Foundation, Le'ilui Nishmas Yehuda Aryeh ben Yoshua Yakir.
In a certain sense, we finished one big portion of the topics we're speaking about, which was the basis for Amuna and so on. We now would turn to the list of questions that I had and try to address them. The questions do seem to be drawn at random. I've tried to organize them, I guess, into subtopics, and I would say the subtopics are as follows. One is, how do you define a person's avoda on a personal level? What are chumris? What are not chumris? Why is the Torah so strict? And why do they emphasize Gemara and Yeshivas, etc., etc.? And that would be one category. A second category would be a person who's left the yeshiva. Are we meant to take the package the way we got it in yeshiva and just keep it on in the outside world? There seem to be a lot of issues with that. And more than anything else, there seems to be simply the sense that according to yeshiva understanding, what you're now doing is meaningless and for 90% of the time. And it's very hard to take the package when the core of the package itself seems to be oxymoronic. Being Oved Hashem when 90% of the time you're a lawyer doesn't seem to be quite what the message in Shiva is, and let alone a lot of other issues that come along with it. A third issue that seems to predominate a lot of questions is our interaction with the outside world. We're now faced for the first time really with interacting with secular people, with women, with Goyim, and all sorts of different people. And how do we understand that interaction? What's our perspective, etc.? I think those are three broad topics that sort of include almost all the questions. Let's start, I guess, with the first one. And I think the best place is also to lay down a certain foundation before we even to get an understanding of what the yeshiva does. What is the purpose of a person in this world? We're ma'aminim, we believe HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave everybody neshama. The neshama in the loosest sense of the word is something that that has a penchant for doing the good, the right, the divine, etc., put into a body which has its own mechanisms, dumped it into this world. Tachlis, what's the tachlis of this? Why did God create man, which is really a question of why did God create the world? This question has different answers. They are kind of, what does an elephant look like to six blind men? It's putting together the entire package, but it really depends on what's the angle you're looking at. The answers, I'll list two, three, four different answers, but they're really two, three, four different aspects of an answer, and it's important to get a sense of it, because whenever we're going to deal with specifics, we obviously need to know the general picture first. So when we ask the question, why did God create the world and man? When we talk about the world, we mean man specifically, because our understanding is the entire world is a pyramid, man is on top, and these are tools for man. So the first thing is just to define the question in a way that it can be asked. When we ask why, there are two ways of describing why. In the old Ivrit, there was Lama and Madua. For instance, if I ask why is this person inviting me for dinner, and the answer is in order to solicit an invitation, a donation for his very worthy institution. So the question why was towards what purpose, and the answer is towards the purpose of soliciting a donation. Or soliciting an investment for his businesses. If I ask why is this person so gung-ho about making money, what I'm asking is what psychological impulse is driving this person's greed. So the question why on an action has really two nuances. It's either for what, towards what, or from what. And, where's it coming from? The first question of towards what needs to be asked about God's work, because that's going to be the guiding light to put everything together. There's a tachlis to the Bria is an extremely fundamental part of our Emunah, in the sense that Hashem, in as much as he expressed Chachma, means everything has a tachlis, and all of the mirrored activities in the world, they are come together at a focal point. That's the tachlis of Wachas Rahe the world, and that's a question that not only may we ask, it is a question that is most obligatory to ask, because that's the Yisod B'Shorash Avoda. The question of, well, if a person does something, means he has a need for it, means that he's lacking something, so what's the psychological lack or need, is an invalid question towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We posit that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not have needs, he's not lacking, and therefore that question does not fall under the range of questions that we can deal with. And once more, for the people that are that find it difficult to live in a world that there are things that we cannot answer or we cannot ask, in a sense, anyone who's familiar with physics today at the lower levels, at the micro level, the quantum level, knows there are many things that's the way it is. And why do certain particles cluster together? Why do certain particles distribute evenly? That's it. This is the Matthias, and we work with it. It's frustrating, yes, but we always bear in mind that the mind is limited. And just like when a little kid asks you a thing that's an adult topic, and he has no way he can understand it, you tell him, my kid, you're very bright, you can do multiplication and addition like a 15-year-old, but you're a 5-year-old, and there are things your mind cannot understand. And whatever I'll explain to you, it's not going to work. In 10 years from now, come around, it'll work. So we need to live with that limitation. Our questions are not what forced God, what made God, what need God has, because those have been posited as being invalid, but rather towards what. So there are a few answers, and they're not contradictory, because really they are subtle, different perspectives. The answer most commonly written is Lehetiv Linevrov. Kadosh Baruch Hu created a world in order to bring good to the Nevroim. That answer is most common. The answer that's given, I guess, in Sfarim with an Atiyah for Kabbalah, even though both are given, but there's another answer that comes across, and that is HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to reveal his infiniteness even within the domain of a finite world. That is another answer. Just like, let's give just a muscle, what kind of muscle fit. If somebody asks you, if a person asks you, what are the prime numbers? I would need to keep writing from today forever, assuming that there are an infinite amount of prime numbers. I can do something else. I can give you a formula, and then the formula is very finite, but it has in itself the key for an infinite amount of numbers. So a formula is a finite entity that has a limitless an infinite amount possible answers. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the context of what's happening in the world, the purpose of the world is for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be Megala Elokus within confines of material, finite, etc. world. They're not at all exclusive, the answers. One is dealing with the issue of why couldn't just be Meitiv Stam. They're really dealing, if you think about it, they're dealing with different nuances of the question. I think it'll help us with our structure, I will be noted towards the second answer. In other words, the big picture is HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to express Elokus or infinity through Chomer, or finite, or nanolocus, etc., etc. Let's take it a little bit out of a mystical realm, and let's talk about it in something we can actually relate to. If I'm a person who has no interest whatsoever in diamonds, some might think I don't care for them, I don't like them, they don't mean anything for me, and I got a diamond gift from somebody. I can't sell it for whatever reason, it's passed or whatever it is. I'm very happy to give it to somebody as a gift. I don't care for diamonds, don't mean anything to me, I don't wear them, I can't sell it and cash in for something I really do want. So giving it as a gift to somebody means very little. If I like diamonds and I treasure them, it really, really means a lot to me, and I take it and give it as a gift to somebody, so I've expressed my goodness, my good-heartedness, through using a tool of a selfish person. Let's say a person has no type for women, he's very old or whatever, and he does not do anything improper with an HSH. Well, doesn't mean anything really. But then you have a person who is a lot of taiva, and the sense of propriety and the sense of kedusha and the sense of self-discipline, whatever it is, it does not restrains him from doing anything inappropriate. Then we have a revelation of the divine through the non-divine. Here we have a person who's flesh and blood, and he, in that flesh and blood, serves as a vehicle for something greater than itself. So it means the giluyim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu as being kadosh, doesn't come through a malach who's all fire and is not shaykh to the world of taiva, and you just see purity. You see a flesh and blood Yosef HaTzadik, who is the prime of his youth, the paradigm of beauty, completely non-threatening situation, if he does the Avera, no social embarrassment, nothing. And what stops him and what shapes his actions is a higher sense. So that is what is meant by revealing HaKadosh Baruch Hu through a physical world. So Elokus and the ideals and the values of what we call Elokus needed to express themselves in this world. Which means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu put us into a contra-divine world, either passively or actively. The world and its natural setting is a far cry from what Elokus is, and the tachlis of a person was to bring out Elokus in this world. That is a way to describe the entire package, I think, in a way that will be very helpful for us as we as we go along. A corollary of it being the tachlis is as follows. We've mentioned before, and we spoke about it from yes.
Second question: what's the difference between human decision showing, bringing Elokus in this world, and Hashem doing it through Nisim, such as Kriyas Yamsuf? There was no human decision necessarily. Let's see what I look at.
So Hashem doing it through a Nes is a step lower than a person willingly doing it. It's just like, let's take a different example. If I'm a teacher and I take a Talmud who's got who's like a goody-goody kid and he does everything he's told, my influence on him is nice, but it's not noteworthy, he doesn't say anything. If I take a kid who's rambunctious and mischievous and doesn't really listen easily, and I was mashpi on him and he still stops from doing something or he does something he's supposed to do, that's a very powerful display. A nace for a thinking person is not as powerful as a Baal Bechira making the decision based on cognizance. So a nace is only there as a temporary, for temporary reasons, as we'll see. It's not there as for real tachlis. We once spoke about HaKadosh Baruch Hu as being echad and the significance of what's the difference between the God is one, two, three, a committee, or whatever. So there is an emuna aspect to it, where the Rambam speaks about corporality and the unity being the corollaries of each other, I want to speak of practical applications. If there are many different, for instance, if a person goes to university, there's no way to say choosing medicine is better than choosing law is better than choosing arts. There's no way of saying you need to take only art courses, you need to take only these courses. The university has many goals. The common denominator is education, but each and every one of them is fine, and you can mix and match and choose and have many goals. I can't go to a person in this world, if I come to a person and say, do you think people should be good? And the guy says, yeah. I says, so why do you spend your time doing other things? Well, the person looks blank and say, well, I'm a good person also. I'm a good person, and I like basketball, and I like hanging about a bit, and so on. There's no reason why a good person needs to be 100% of the time good. It doesn't make any sense. But let's say I'm a business consultant. And there's a business and it's not going so well, or it's going well and they're trying to improve it. I sit down with the CEO and I say, okay, let's go through this. Why do we have a division whose job is to do X? If the person cannot describe how it helps the goal of the business, the job of this business is to produce cars. If the CEO tells me that he spent $1 million building park benches for people because it's a nice thing to do, I'll tell him, no, it's a nice thing to do for you, but the business has one goal. The person might say, well, it makes a lot of PR for the company and that helps sales, then it's fine. But in a business setting, there's one goal. The goal is to make profit. And every single penny spent has to be explainable. Even the IRS will recognize it. If there are expenses in the business that don't lead to profits, they're highly questionable. My wife once worked many, many years ago as a bookkeeper. She worked for an accountant and she did the books. She did the books of a very prestigious architectural firm in Israel. But, you know, it was like everybody else. Everybody tried to do a little cheating and so on. And people would do shopping on Friday on the corporate account with the expectation it will come off the corporate bottom line and, you know, there'll be less taxes to be paid and so on. Instead of being taxed twice as salary and as corporate income, it's just gone. And for the life of her, she was trying to fit in gefilte fish under an architectural firm's business enterprise, and she was having a very tough time. You know, how do you put in, you know, chamin for Shabbat and gefilte fish? It doesn't work. It's got to have one tachlis, and we understand it very own business. When you come for a business meeting and a guy sits down to tell some stories, you can say, okay, he's softening us up. He's putting us in a different mood. He's hinting at something. It's not story time. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world with a tachlis, which means that everything is geared for that. A, it means all the pieces in the world have meaning in that sense. It means that the person himself is obligated to only one thing, and that's one tachlis, to be megala lekus in a world that is physical in every way possible. It means that we're holding account of the bits and pieces missing from it. It's a very, very, very tough mission. Before I go further, I don't want to explain it. It does not in any sense mean that people shouldn't take it easy, shouldn't breathe, and so on. Part of taking good care of machinery is oiling it, giving it rest, and so on. If you want a person to last, there are many, many needs that are genuine needs, and that's a good business sense. It's good business sense to take off some time. It's good business sense to lay on the beach. It's good business sense to spend time with this and that. But at the end of the day, it has one justification. The Rambam in Shmoneh Prakim has, in one of the most powerful pieces, he says that the piece in the memory in Pirkei Avos that he finds the most powerful is the Chol Maaseh L'Shem Shemayim Shenema V'Chol Derecheh Da'eyu, and it is fitting for a Tana like that to have said such a profound remark. And basically what he says is, what he means to say is, you construct a lattice of all of the activities of a person and ask to head towards one goal. It includes a million activities with a lot of different steps, but at the end of the day, it has to lead to a certain goal. So the goal is to be Megala Elokus within a physical framework. That's the way the world was created. That's in the macro picture, and it's the picture for every individual. Which means also that our attitude towards life is going to have to be very businesslike. And let me explain the difference between two attitudes. Both might be orthodox, but very, very dissimilar, built on this point. Let me use it a chazal and explain a chazal of this. It says, by Yaakov Avinu, by Yifka Bamakom. So Chazal Darshan, Melamed that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Mekomo Shel Olam, Ve'ena Olam Mekomo Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. A very, very mystical Chazal. Rav Shachaim speaks about it. He's meramez on big things with all sorts of things. We can put it in words that are very meaningful for us. And let's take and let's understand it. Mekomo means the outermost structure of something. For instance, when a rock falls down at a certain speed, the playing field is the law of gravity, and the rock is an example of it. Events that happen in our world, the playing field are the laws of gravity, and this is part of it. Let's take a look at another thing. Most people's attitude would be as follows. Your country, its laws, its citizens, its needs is the big picture. Arts and culture are functions within a society and have a very important place within that society. There are some people, call them leftists, call them universalists, call them whatever you want, they have a very different attitude. Art, music, humanitarianism is the big picture. Countries are small pieces of a bigger picture. Yes, everybody's got to live in a place, so just like a county is kind of fairly insignificant, country is insignificant, and if it's a question of betraying, quote-unquote, your country, but you feel the greater needs of art and music and so on and so forth are greater than that, that's the playing field, and the country is just simply a unit. It's a convenience thing, and that is important, is which theater is playing it. Most people would not feel that way, but there are people that feel that way, and I'm just using it as an example. Let's take it to religion. There is an attitude, life is a big place. There are jobs, careers, society, culture, arts, sciences, so on and so forth. And religion is a very important piece of life. It's very important that a person has religious anchors and religious drives and so on and so forth. But it's a piece of life. It's under the. It's a subdivision of the great universe we call life, and that's your attitude. In which case, if let's say, for instance, religion decides to throw in some isurim that basically make culture impossible in the sense we have it, well, it's not possible that religion could crowd out culture. So either we'll kind of anti-religion in a different way, we'll reinterpret it, we'll somehow skip over that part of whatever it is. That's one way of looking at it. The other way of looking at it, the entire world is Malchus Shemayim. That's what life's about, that's what life is. Within that playing field, there are jobs, secular jobs, careers, culture, music, art, people. But it's all on the playing field of expressing the divine. And if there's any conflict, well, obviously, that particular piece is just not part of it, that's all. Or it's not going to be part of it now, and so on. That is a crux of a big difference between attitudes. If your attitude is religion is one of many important human functions, you can never ever have a situation when there's a conflict that something else will really give way. Maybe temporarily, maybe in certain cases, but it's unthinkable. Just like, for instance, in Allah itself, you have all sorts of essays being built, Holosa essays, and you have all sorts of, Eifasas Lashem and Harashah. The one thing that's immutable is Avodah Zarah. A Navi cannot come and do Harashah and Avodah Zarah. There's no Eifasas Lashem and do Avodah Zarah. There's no Siddur Holosa and do Avodah Zarah. The reason is very simple. Avodah Zarah is the religion, and everything else is within the religion. So you might be Docha Shabbos because of B'moado, or B'yom HaShmini, or because of Pikuach Nefesh, or whatever. That's not a problem, because Shabbos is a piece, and that's a piece, and so on. But Avodah Zarah is the religion. Emunah is the religion, and then there are no ways to be Docha that, because by definition, you are chopping down the platform upon which everything else is sitting. So our understanding of life, what is the crux, what is life, really creates a tremendous platform for issues or not issues. And for a lot of people, subtly, a lot of people have those nisyonos that really make life difficult is predicated on this. I want to give an example. I want to give an example of the difference where the attitude makes a difference in nisyonos in life. Let's take an example. Again, I'm going to be a little blunt. In the world around us, the culture of eating is extremely important. It's important because it's a pleasure. Next to arayas, it's the most powerful pleasure we have. It's all around us. We live in a culture where, you walk in the street and there are thousands of restaurants. You read about, whenever I read a very enticing travel publication, go to country X, it's beautiful scenery and the restaurants are great. And you can try this food, that food, the other food, and restaurants are right up there as being, you're part of the world if you taste Mexican food and then Chinese food and Japanese food and Indonesian food, and that's really, that makes you part of the world. That's where you meet people and so on. The Torah comes along and puts down Isurim, and Rabbanan add more Isurim and so on and so forth. Now, what's my problem? So there is a particular type of problem for all of us. You go on a business trip and you have to live on matzah and tuna fish for 5 days when everybody else is living on kaldavas or whatever you want to call it. It's frustrating because, matzah and tuna fish, do all due respect, has its limitations, and 5 days is sort of gets to the limit. So that's the Yitzhar that everybody has. And same thing with women. Flirting with women and so on, it's a pleasure, and everyone has the potential of that pleasure, and when you're denied the pleasure, it's frustrating. That is a physical type of frustration that's universal. But there's another part to it. I'm not living life to its fullest extent. I mean, people have such a rich life here that they have thousands of restaurants to choose from, and we're stuck between Ben Yehuda and Max's. For those of you who are not in Washington, those are the two, that's it. No life. I don't have life. That pain is a lot more deep than the pain of the particular meal that I want to eat. I feel that everyone else has such a rich, everyone else has a screen with 16,000 colors, and I'm black and white, and it's a whole different world. And the same thing with socializing. Everybody else has a very fulfilling life because we're free people today, and interacting with males and females of all stripes and colors, is life. And I'm stuck. I have boundaries. I'm a lot more frustrated than just a particular taiva. I'm not living life. And I'm being shorn of any type. If somebody comes along with a kol isha problem. So one problem is I happen to like this particular singer, and she's a woman, and I miss that. That's one particular part of it. The other particular part of it is, hey, no opera, no musicals, no plays, no movies, no life. And that is a much, much, much more difficult problem, because, yes, built on the psychological axioms that your mindset is built on, that is absolutely right. Abba Berman once told somebody, from your perspective, you're absolutely right, but your perspective is wrong. Understanding Hashem Echad means, there's one thing here. It's like when you walk into a plant, into a factory, and as nice as you're making everything, ideally, reality-wise, there should be only one thought. How do I maximize profit? If painting it nicely will help people work, paint it nicely. If it's not going to add to production, don't. My home, I paint nicely because my home has a different set of bottom line. My home, the bottom line is enjoyment. Factory, the bottom line is productivity. And I need, what chair shall I buy to work with? Not the most comfortable chair, the most productive chair. And if a simple plastic chair is most productive, it's going to be that. What chair should I have at home? The most comfortable chair, the most enjoyable chair. So the basic emuna, in a very powerful way, has to be that the world has one tachlis. The tachlis is to bring out ruchnis in this world, and we shape everything around that tachlis. That, I think, is a very, very important aleph. We're going to need to speak more specifically about how does that happen, and so on and so forth. But without that platform, we're not going to get it. Yes, Pinchas?
Just to understand, Rabbi is speaking about this in terms of emunah. So is this Chazal telling us that this is tachlis debri, or is this something in the Torah, or is this just something that we have as emunah?
All of the above. It's something, if you take a safe like Mesillas Yesharim, where he starts off, Mesillas Yesharim says, I will teach you now the ladder of ascent, the ladder of growth. But before I talk about the ladder, there's one chapter called Chovos Arim Bolamo. What's the platform that the ladder rests on? And he brings Chazal. It's one of those things that is so obvious that it's almost, you know, it's like you tend, and that's the point Mr. Sharon makes. He brings a lot of Chazal to support this point, and the whole sense of things, Kimber Taros, Yege Yom Velayla, and so on, the sense of Dveikus. Dveikus means completely Ledovkabo, completely bound to, means there's nothing else other than that. Also the concept of Hashem Echad, I think that's the point of it. If God is one, the world has one purpose. Olam Domo LaProzdor, it's the Prozdor to the Traklin. I don't need to repeat it. You look at Mr. Shram Chosar and Balomo, and he brings the Chazal. The thing is that these Chazal are so manifold, there's so many of them, that you just kind of, and you mentally just skip over it, because, yeah, of course, everybody knows this, you know, you're not telling me any chiddush over here. So, but when Pinchas asks, is this emunah and so on, let me explain an important point here. Sometimes we have a problem intellectually with something. Is this true? Is this not true? Sometimes we have a problem emotionally with something. It's an emotional transition to move yourself over from having where your sense of self and life is the picture we gave. It's a very, very difficult one, because in some sense you're crowding out anything else in terms of tithe and so on. I remember I went to a school that was kind of had a very good Hebrew department, very good English department, very mixed messages, inputs, etc. And we had a teacher who was a guy. I remember his name, Mr. Saint Croix, and he asked us once. He wasn't provocative. He was actually a very positive person. But you know, once in a while, we would get into conversation about religion and so on. And he asked, "I don't understand," he says, "if you're so intensely religious, why do you have such strong, I don't know if I said material bends or success, like you guys are gung-ho to ace the SATs and the college admission and careers and so on. How come? Like, just like he's Catholic, I believe, and he understands a religious life is very monastic and so on." To which, you know, so the boys weren't sure of the answer. This was ninth grade, I remember. And one boy, actually a thoughtful, smart kid, said, "We're taught that a person is supposed to have two goals in life, a spiritual and a material," which in a certain sense was the sum total of the impressions we got from our teachers at Bain when we tried to put the picture together. Well, the at Bain said, "You should be sitting and learning." The teacher said, "You should go to college, and it's okay if you go Shabbos to pray, that's not a problem." And you put the two together, and the message was that. And that's, on an emotional level, hefech of achdus of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it is a very difficult, because it means giving up our most basic physical need, as we want a world to enjoy, and it's just not here. But I think that this is a very important episode for the next question that will come. And once we have this down, we can now ask ourselves more specifically, how does the Torah achieve the goals? Are there different approaches for different people? Is there a reason why yeshivas seem to have a very, very kind of one focus goal to detriment of other areas and so on? We'll deal with those issues as we go on.